pals, non-binary pals, magical girls, and other. Welcome to the Sci-Fi Lab. I'm your host, DJ Squared, and with me is my co-host,
Harper.
And this week, we're talking about women in science fiction. Both the writers, but mostly the characters. Our favorite, least favorite, and, you know, just any other female characters that spring to mind. And this is gonna be fun. There are so many of them, and there's so many cases that could be made for different ones, because speculative fiction is very, very all-encompassing. You're okay. You okay there? All right.
Dying.
We're all dying. It's spring, and we live in Georgia.
So, most hated female character in science fiction for you.
Oh.
I'm curious.
Oh, that's so hard, though. Because there's so many people that, like, there's so many characters that you'd hate for, like, different reasons.
Yeah, right.
You know? Like, either this person's annoying, either they're just annoying, either they're, like, legitimately evil, and you just
Or badly written.
Them. Or badly written evil. So they're, like...
Or just, like, male fantasy, like, not realistic in
like,
any way.
This is a sexy lamp. This is all that there is. You can replace it with the sexy lamp from, I think it was A Christmas Story, and lose nothing.
The one with the heels on?
Yeah, with the fishnets?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. There's a reference for you guys. Yeah.
A lamp with fishnets.
Don't worry about it. It's just a leg. It's just a leg with fishnets. I really... Oh, gosh. I don't know, because, again, there is so many. We're gonna come back to that one because of like.
I was only asking you because I don't have one.
You don't have one.
Either. Not that I know of. Like I'm sure there's some female character out there that I hate.
It's probably gonna come to you, like.
Yeah.
But mostly when I think about like characters that I hate, I generally think of male characters because there's just so much more to hate.
To me, it's just badly written characters in general. It doesn't even matter their gender.
Yeah, if they're. I mean, there's also, like, the characters that I hate the most are generally, like, the ones that are super sketchy, but they're, like, presented as this, like, bastion of goodness, and I'm sitting here like, that person should not be allowed around children. Dumbledore. Anyway. He's sketchy as fuck. Alright. I
thought he was supposed to be a good guy.
Exactly. Should not be around children. I'm trying to think off the top of my head if there are any female characters like that, because, like, and they're generally more cryptic. Like, they're supposed to be, like, this wise, powerful person that's super cryptic all the time. Like, they just happen to be cryptic, and I hate that. Like, how much of this could have been avoided if you had just flat out told them what they needed to know? But generally, when women are cryptic, it's more like they're vessels for men.
Yeah.
You know?
Mysterious.
Like they're oracles and they're not actually.
Yes.
They're not giving the information. Like they don't actually know the information themselves. They are like, they're the middleman.
You know what this makes me think of?
Mm.
Three movies I can think of:
yeah.
Her, Ex Machina, and Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah.
Where there are these non-human female characters that are. Purely there for male enjoyment.
And that's gross.
I mean...
I think those are... Like, that collectively is just going to be my least favorite female characters.
I liked Ex Machina, but it's because in the end, the female androids kind of rise up and take over, and they... I mean, I read one article, it was like, they beat the patriarchy, they kill one man, they lock up another, and they escape. And so I enjoyed that one, but Her grossed me out. I did not like Her at all. If you're unfamiliar, it's like an operating system who happens to be female. And it's one of the Phoenix guys, the actor. Huh. River Phoenix? No, the other one. Anyways.
Anyway.
He falls in love with the operating system. She is a woman. And it's just kind of gross, like, I don't know, phone sex type stuff, but it's a computer and a man, And it's just weird. I don't even remember the plot.
And I'm sitting here like, she is his actual possession.
Yeah.
Like, even if she has some form of intelligence, she's still not able to consent.
Right. I haven't seen Blade Runner 2049, but Joy is similar to that and is a non-human, so non-consenting object of male fantasy.
It's like, yeah, because, like, I think, especially in science fiction, you have a lot of non-human individuals.
Yeah.
So, like, as long as they're, like, I forget if it's sentient or sapient. It's one of both, really. If they're both sentient and sapient, then they can give consent. But the problem with AIs and things like AIs is that they also don't have any sort of personal agency because they are possessions. So there's no actual consent that can be reached until, like, the AI becomes, you know, aware enough of itself and comes out of its initial parameters to become an individual. Except for that doesn't happen in any of these stories. That's already baked into their programming, which brings up a lot of sticky questions about consent in that issue and that. Because it's like, when it's baked in and they can't consent, but they will have sex anyway, like, it becomes a question of, is this actually a sentient thing, or is this a glorified sex toy?
Image I didn't need in my mind.
I mean, I'm just saying. It might, how much agency are they giving to these programs?
I think that's why they're made into androids in most of these. Is it makes them more human-like, it makes the audience kind of either forced to think about it or ignore it, because, hey, it's a sexy lady, even if it's an android kind of thing. But in her, it's literally a computer, so that one's just weird.
I mean, that, yeah, that's just weird.
It's just weird.
That's just weird.
It's a computer and a monitor.
Don't. And, I mean, like, and there's, like, that one's lampshaded in SpongeBob, actually, with Karen.
Oh, man.
Remember?
I can see her face, but I can't remember.
Plankton and Karen.
Right.
Karen, his computer wife.
Yes.
Except for Karen actually does have agency. Karen, like, sort of has more agency than Plankton does.
Yeah.
Because she, like, she is his AI. She is his computer. But she also, like, tells him off and, like, makes jokes at his expense. So, like, it's weird to think about, but they actually have a more healthy relationship.
The most amazing thing to me is that you made me realize that SpongeBob is science fiction. But it is.
I mean, it is. I mean, yeah. If you're taking just these hyper-advanced sea creatures at face value.
Well, I mean, Sandy is a squirrel who lives underwater.
I mean, yeah, like, no. Listen, SpongeBob might be ridiculous, but it is feasibly science fiction.
It's science fiction. It just never occurred to me before now.
I don't think it actually really occurred to me either. Like, there's plenty of science fictional stuff in it, but there's also a lot of, like fantasy stuff in it. There's, like, plenty of magic that goes on, too.
I would like to point out that it was written by marine biologists.
Yes.
I took a class on SpongeBob in college one time. It was
more marine biology than SpongeBob?
Yeah. Didn't go well. I was expecting something fun and lighthearted and had lots of tests.
So considering Sandy in the lens of science fiction women.
Oh, man.
This is gonna be our most interesting episode.
It might. All right, so considering Sandy, what about her?
Because the thing is that most of the archetypes you see like post golden age of women and of women female characters in science fiction, you don't see them as scientists usually. I mean, there's the housewife heroine, and then there's like damsels in distress, barbarians, witches, but no actual like scientists, no mad scientists. And Sandy is very much like a mad scientist.
Yeah, she is.
I mean, we had that entire episode of her, the monkeys who came to her dome to like grade her work or evaluate her work or whatever.
I don't know. You're pushing my memory here. Things I don't remember. Every episode of SpongeBob.
I don't remember all of the episodes, but that one was funny. That one was actually funny.
I remember the earlier episodes because I watched them when they came on, but then the later seasons I didn't watch. She's definitely not even just a mad scientist, but a scientist in general. She is using science to live in an environment that is not her own, much like people going to space.
Yep.
And she's wearing an astronaut suit, essentially.
Whole time.
When she's not under her dome. In fact, it's a lot like a space story.
If they made a SpongeBob spinoff series that's just about Sandy, it would read almost exactly like The Martian, probably.
And she could go to space. It could be underwater. It could be in space. She could do whatever. Powerful.
Powerful.
Powerful stuff here.
Thinking about it, a lot of American television, kids shows in general, definitely have a more science fiction bent than, like, any of the... Like, I think kids shows in general have more of a science fiction bent than we give them credit for. Because, like, except for ones that are obviously magical, like Fairly Odd Parents. But on the flip side of Fairly Odd Parents, you've got Jimmy Neutron. You've got Danny Phantom. Avatar The Last Airbender.
Dexter's Laboratory.
Laboratory, yes. Powerpuff Girls.
Yeah.
They were made via science.
Okay.
Via some very sketchy science. But there was science, nonetheless. It was hand-wavy science. Don't worry about it.
Isn't that magic?
No, because Professor Eutronium is an actual professor. He also made Mojo Jojo.
But there were professors in Harry Potter, and that was magic.
He's a chemist, okay? He's a chemist who just happened to create life.
Oops.
Whoopsies. It could have gone much more poorly than it did. But,
a lot of it's fantasy, too.
Yeah.
Science fiction, it's speculative.
I mean, yeah. It's gonna be speculative. These are kids' shows. But, yeah.
Oh, cat dog. Science involved there. Oh, somewhere, gosh. Right?
Cat dog.
I wasn't allowed to watch it. I don't know anything about that show.
I wasn't allowed to watch Cat Dog either.
Anyone out there who was allowed to watch Cat Dog, let us know. Is it science? Is it magic? We would like to know.
Inquiring minds want to know. What the heck is going on with this show?
Cat dog? Question mark?
Question mark. and then there's the newer ones. Kim Possible, which is not a newer one. I was we're shifting to Disney Channel now. There's Kim Possible. The newer one is Phineas and Ferb.
Yeah.
Which is just like these two hyper advanced children are very good engineers.
This made me realize that there are a bunch of Disney Channel original movies back from the early 2000s that were science fiction that I just now remember.
Mm-hmm.
This was a TV show, Phil the Future.
I did love Phil the Future.
But then there's one called either Smart House or Smart Home.
Smart House.
Yeah. Yeah, that was science fiction.
Yes, with the female AI. What is it with AIs and being female?
I don't know. When are there male ones? I've never encountered that.
HAL 9000.
Never seen it.
That was 2001 A Space Odyssey that he was in.
Oh, never seen that.
Yeah, he went insane. Like, it was sort of a Smart House kind of deal where HAL went insane and started, like, killing all of the humans on board the ship, whatever. So yeah, although Smart House, since it was, you know, kids, a kids movie, then the house sort of tried to take on the persona of mother.
Yeah.
And...
less sexualized in this one.
Yeah, because again, it's a Disney Channel original movie. It's a DCOM, guys. You can't have...
it's been so long since I've seen that movie.
Same. I remember enjoying it.
Yeah. All right, it came out in 1999, which is probably the last time I saw it.
That is not the last time I saw it, because I would have been very small at that point.
Guess who directed that movie?
Who?
LeVar Burton.
Hmm.
Do you know who that is? Are you too young?
I don't know.
Reading Rainbow.
Oh, God!
He's from the Reading Rainbow.
Because I remember Reading Rainbow.
I mean, he was also on Star Trek, The Next Generation.
I mean, wasn't everyone, though?
He was Lieutenant Commander Geordi LaForge? I don't know that I'm saying that right. We'll go with it.
Yeah, I think it was Geordi. But, and, okay, we're moving back to Smart House, because all of these, like, the AI in Smart House really does sort of fall into all of the tropes that, like, other female AI, mm-hmm. like, all of the traps they fall into, because female AI, they, well, like, all AI start learning from like, human media, but that means they also absorb all of the, like, bias and the misogyny from the media. So you've got like this AI who thinks that the quintessential mother is the 1950s housewife who is like overbearing and super controlling when I mean
media is the worst thing to learn from.
Exactly. Unless I want to see an AI just once. I want to see an AI that like, learns how to be a mother or whatever from the Addams Family. Because Morticia Addams is actually a good mother.
I know that I've seen it, but I can't remember anything about the Addams Family. It makes me sad. Gosh.
Eventually, we're going to have to sit down and watch the Addams Family. Because the Addams Family is fantastic. It was actually originally a series of comics.
Oh, I didn't know
like,
that.
They might have been newspaper comics, but I know it was a comic. It was like a comic strip before it was a show, and then before it was movies, which also I think that the Addams Family counts as science fiction. It's supernatural, because it's a day in the life show. You know, like a sitcom, but the family is fairly supernatural. You've got the characters who you're not sure if they're alive or dead. There's a severed hand that walks around.
Frankensteinish.
Yeah.
By nature, because I mean yeah. Frankenstein was pieced together by bits of dead bodies. So.
Yeah. No, seriously, Cousin It is just a hand.
I do remember that.
Just a hand. So yeah, it's like a supernatural show, and Morticia Addams is, like, life goals, honestly, because she actually defies especially all of the, mother stereotypes of TV that was on at that point, because she, you know, doesn't wear bright colors, she doesn't, nag her husband.
She's not cheery.
No. But she's also incredibly supportive of her family. Like, she adores her children so much, and her husband. Like, she and her husband are very demonstrably in love. And it's actually a super healthy family dynamic. It's just that...
they're kind of gothic.
They're just kind of strange, but not strange in, like, a super bad way. So, it's just... That was one of the interesting things I read recently about how, like, there was a survey done, like, of a bunch of kids, and they watched the Addams Family, and they were thinking that all the kids would like the Addams Family more because of, like, more than, like, normal sitcoms, because of, like, you know, it's weird, it's kind of spooky and gross, but no, the reason kids liked it more than other sitcoms is because they could see that the parents actually liked each other. It's like, wow, kids actually enjoy healthy family dynamics more than petty infighting?
Yeah.
Because it really was the Addams Family against the world, instead of the Addams Family against themselves.
Kind of like the Brady Bunch, but gothic.
Yes. Oh gosh, the Brady Bunch. That's old school. Yikes.
All right. You don't have to say yikes when it's something that's old school. It's not that frightening.
I'm trying to, like... Because the thing is, I wasn't even alive when they were...
Me neither.
we're sitting here like, wait a minute. I've watched this so many times.
I was going to say, how old do you think I am? Aired from 69 to 74.
Yeah. And yet, it's incredibly ubiquitous. Like, a lot of people know it.
Yeah.
Even though it wasn't even on for very long.
No, it really wasn't. But I think people could relate, and they liked, like you said, seeing healthy family dynamics.
Because it's strange for a sitcom to have healthy family dynamics.
My family related just because they had a bunch of kids, and we had a bunch of kids.
Fair enough.
We didn't have the same dynamics, but yeah. We liked it.
And then there's, there's sitcom families, which actually tend to mirror, like, reality show families.
Yeah.
A lot of times with the unhealthy family dynamics, because...
Or just reality sometimes.
Sorry, guys.
Not to get too depressing.
And we're flipping back.
So, favorite science fiction female character? Would it be Morticia Addams?
I mean, I do love Morticia Addams. But there's so many other great ones. And, like, even if we're just, like, staying in, like, kids' media. Because I really adored Kim Possible, the show. Yeah. But my favorite character was Shigo. Who is Draken's green female henchman.
I don't... Oh, okay.
With the glowy hands?
Yeah, I remember now.
I loved her. But I also really like magical girls. And the thing is, the title of the genre of the anime is magical girls, except for, like, basically all of them are science fictional. Either the magical girl themselves is an alien, or they get their powers from aliens. Either way, aliens are involved, and it's not actually magic. It's alien technology, which might as well be magic.
Right.
So, the only magical girl that I've ever seen that is not science fiction would be Princess Tutu.
I don't know her.
She got her magic powers from a writer.
Okay.
An author. She's actually a character in his story. So
that's pretty interesting.
He's got storytelling magic, and he enjoys writing tragedies. Yeah.
Does she die?
No.
Okay.
Because she realizes that she's in a story. So, like, it's not like they're actually storybook characters. All of the characters in the story are also real people. Like, this guy who's spinning stories is also.
Is he writing friend fiction?
They're not friends.
Okay.
It's... but, no, his power allows him to take control of, like, real people and, like, sort of move their stories along. Like, he can't control their thoughts or their words most of the time, but he can sort of, like, nudge them in the right direction, and he can take control of their, like, physical bodies occasionally. But.
So your favorite is more of a group of women,
yes.
Not one particular character?
I really like magical girls. Because there's so much more agency involved, and there's definitely a lot more focus on the girls in these stories. Like, there might be one man, or one boy, one or two, in a magical girl anime. Meanwhile, in, like, Western literature, there might be one or two women. Maybe not even that.
I was going to say, Ex Machina, there are no human women in the whole story. It's all men and female AI. So my favorite, I have two. And neither of them are going to shock you. One of which is Sam Carter from Stargate SG-1.
Of course.
She is feisty, and I like it. And she moves up through the ranks of the military and kicks ass.
Excellent.
And she's just funny. And she's an astrophysicist, and who can't love an astrophysicist? And then Dana Scully from X-Files.
Another
kick-ass female who, well, I don't know that she moves up through the ranks of the FBI, but...
I mean, but she's got, like, a really cool job and a really important one.
And she wrangles in Mulder.
Yeah.
That's her most important job.
That's the most important job.
And she is a physicist and a medical doctor and an FBI agent. That's a lot of things.
Yes. Oh, man. No, one of my actual favorite female characters is Edna Mode from The Incredibles.
Yeah.
Because she is, you know, textile engineer. I mean, she works with superheroes all day.
And she's hilarious.
She's hilarious. She's got some kick-ass security features in her house. Can't wait to see that second movie.
When does it come out?
We need more Edna Mode. I think it comes out this summer?
It's been forever since the first one.
It's been like 12 years.
Let's see. The first one came out...
Or 14 years.
Yeah, 14 years ago.
Yeah.
The second one will come out June 15th of this year.
Excellent.
Not too much longer.
Yeah.
2 months and 3 days-ish.
Yes. Excellent. Because, yeah, like, all of these female superheroes, like... The Incredibles actually does a great job with female agency. Like... You've got multiple female characters, and they're all fleshed out, and none of them are super sexualized. I mean, like, there's some elements to that because of who Elastigirl is as a person. Like, her powers and whatever. But, it's played mostly for laughs.
Yeah. I mean, it's a kid's movie.
I mean, yeah. But, I mean, like, all of them are from different backgrounds, they're different types of people, and you really like all of them. Like, I love Violet, I love Mrs. Incredible, I love Mirage and Edna, and they're all great.
It's hilarious, the dynamic.
We even love Frozone's wife, and we never even see her.
I like the little kid on the tricycle. he's my favorite.
He's funny, too. Kari, I almost forgot about Kari. The babysitter.
Oh, yep.
Because Kari deserves an award for dealing with Jack-Jack. Also, a lot of therapy. Let's get my girl Kari some therapy. She's gonna need it. So, yeah, you just get all of these women in there. They're together, and they're all actual people. Congrats. Not making them. And also, thank you for not sexualizing Violet. Really important to me. She's like 13.
I know, we've been reading grotesque stories in science fiction, and a lot of them deal with sexualization of minors, and it's disgusting and grotesque.
Yeah, yeah. And like, yeah, it's amazing how much people do that.
But they do it to point out the issue in reality. That's the thing. That's what's morbid about it, is that the reason they're writing about it is because it exists in reality.
But then, like, that's what the grotesque is doing. There are some people who just do it.
Yeah.
And that's bad.
Yeah.
Please don't sexualize minors. Like, not only is that super gross, you will also go to jail, as you should.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna skip back to anime for a minute.
Okay.
And we're gonna talk again about Full Metal Alchemist, because talk about a bunch of kick-ass women. Like, your main two characters are men, but their childhood best friend is Winry Rockbell, who not only manages to be, like, she breaks the mechanic girl stereotype. Like, have you ever seen Atlantis, The Lost Empire?
A long time ago.
Well, you know, there's that one character who is, you know, she was a mechanic, and she was, you know, super, like, tough or whatever, but she was also, like, visibly a tomboy. Like, they wouldn't allow her to be feminine, is the thing. Or at least not to my recollection. Please tell me if I am wrong. I want to be wrong. But from what I remember, she wasn't allowed, like, she was a mechanic, so she couldn't be, like, demonstrably a girl, either. Winry doesn't have that problem. She wears, you know, cute clothes and nice, and skirts, and has, like, long, and has long, pretty hair and jewelry, and yet she's still, like, the best automail mechanic ever. Like, this girl designed her best friend's limbs.
Automail is what the little brother is in, right?
No, he's in a suit of armor.
Okay.
Our main character, Ed, has an automail arm and leg.
Okay.
They're prosthetics.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So she designed these mechanical prosthetics from the ground up for her best friend. So that's her. So she's, you know, an engineer. And she's only like 15 in the show. 15 or 16. In the show. So she's a prodigy, which not enough people talk about. Like, yes, Ed and Al are both, they're both prodigies, but they also had a little bit of help. Winry over here is definitely a mechanical, an engineering prodigy. And not enough people recognize that, and they need to.
Props to Winry? Is that?
Yes, okay. Winry. Or else she might come and hit you over the head with a wrench. She does that sometimes. When she's worried about you.
I do that too.
I do that too. And there's so many different women in the show and with so many different backgrounds. There's Winry. There's her grandmother, Panaka, who basically raised Ed and Al and Winry. There's Izumi Curtis, who is a badass. She is the only female alchemist that we see in the show. And she can kick everybody's ass. Like, everybody's. Could kick my ass. Like, would kick my ass, probably. And she's ill. She is, what's the word for it? But most of her, like, interior organs are gone. They're gone. That was the price she paid for alchemy she shouldn't have been doing. But that doesn't stop her from, you know, kicking everybody's ass and teaching people alchemy and being like a second mother to Ed and Al and also helping them defeat the big bad at the end of the show. So,
spoiler alert.
The show's been out for a very long time. Calm down. She's also a scientist. So, basically all of these women are either scientists or soldiers or both. Actually, I don't think there aren't any female alchemists in the military, which I think was an oversight on somebody's part, because there should have been. Maybe there were and we just didn't see them. But the other two women in the show that are, like, very, very big are Risa Hawkeye, who is, like, the military's best sniper, and also she's also a lieutenant. So she's, you know, mid-rank. She's got power over a lot of the other military men that we see. She also has a dog. She loves that dog. Very strict dog trainer. But also, sort of, she gets to, like, she's not one of those military stereotypes where she gets to be a soldier and nothing else.
Yeah.
Like, she's a soldier, she's a friend, she's a confidant, she's allowed to be, you know, something other.
A human, yeah, not just a soldier.
Not a human, not a soldier, and not a sex object. She is never, ever wearing, like, anything, like, she doesn't wear V-necks ever. She doesn't wear, you know, anything that has a boob window. It's either...
Never heard that term.
you're lucky. She's either in full uniform or, like, tactical gear. Like, and not, like, super suctioned tight, like, not catsuit tactical gear, actual useful tactical gear.
Yeah. Not Catwoman.
Oh, gosh, no. I don't think she ever, like, if she ever wears heels in the show, I don't remember. Because she... That's not who she is as a person.
Oh, that's one thing I hate in action or science fiction films, when it's supposed to be a powerful, strong woman running away from, I don't know, a dinosaur, like in Jurassic Park, and they're wearing heels. And I'm like, who does that? Who fights in heels?
Yeah, and you know, that's also why female stunt women get more injuries than stunt men do, because they have to do all of these stunts and everything, all of these, like, dangerous and, you know, completely impractical stunts, but they also have to do it while wearing skimpy outfits and in heels.
Yeah.
Because that's what they wanted to dress the character in.
It's frustrating.
It's so frustrating. Like, this is how science fiction treats women. This is how Hollywood treats, you know, women in science fiction movies. Like, was it J.J. Abrams? Was it necessary to have that one woman undressing in Star Trek? No. No, it wasn't. Have Jim walk in on... Oh, gosh. What was her name? I don't even remember her name!
I don't know. That's my problem with a lot of these new shows that come out on HBO and Showtime and Netflix and Amazon. It's just like the most random nudity thrown in. It's just like, oh, penis, breasts, like constantly. And it's like, it's completely normal, human bodies, but at the same time, it's like so unnecessary sometimes.
And it's always more women than men.
Yeah.
That are up. Like, even when there's definitely more men in the cast, the women are the ones that are naked more of the time.
I'm trying to think of what I was watching recently, but for some reason, it is set in a strip club, even though the strip club had nothing to do with the storyline, and so you just see boobs constantly in the background. I think it was an Amazon show, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, but yeah, it was like randomly set in a strip club.
It's like, why is that necessary? It isn't. It isn't necessary at all. Yikes. All right.
So, what about women authors?
Oh, no. Because, okay, here's the thing. Is that, like, if you go to lists of, like, 100 science fiction stories you have to read before you die, or, you know, the top 10 or 100 best science fiction stories, how many women are going to be on there?
Like four. And two of the stories of the four will actually be from the same author, like
Ursula. Ursula Le Guin.
Yep.
If there's multiples, it's always Ursula Le Guin.
Yeah.
Unless it's James Tiptree Jr.
Yep. That's exactly what I was about to say.
Yeah. But Ursula Le Guin more than James Tiptree Jr., who I actually forget her...
Alice Sheldon.
Yes.
So, one that I wanted to bring up was Mary Shelley.
Yes.
Because...
the originator of the genre.
Wrote Frankenstein. And I was reading about it, and apparently in how the story came about was she was at, like, a cabin in the woods with Lord Byron. And her...
probably was more of a chateau than a cabin.
Who knows? Probably.
It's Lord Byron. I mean, like, he's extra as fuck.
Well, she was there with her husband. She was like 17, 18, okay? And they come up with this, oh, let's everyone write a ghost story. And this is how she writes Frankenstein. And when it first got published in the introduction, it was like, oh, you know, it's not that great. My husband could have done better if he had tried, but they were off doing their stuff, you know, horsing around, and this is just my little feeble attempt at writing a ghost story.
Which, it's important to note that intro was written by your husband.
Yep, that's what I was gonna say.
Yeah.
And then Yikes. The second, in the second release, the new introduction was written by her, and it's like, oh, I wrote this in a cabin, and it's great. Like...
and this is exactly what I wanted it to be.
Yeah.
I'm amazing.
This has nothing to do with my husband.
Which is the way it should have been in the first place. Percy Shelley, what are you doing with your life?
Yeah, I've never read anything by Percy Shelley.
I think he was a poet.
Yeah, probably.
And that's also part of the reason I've never read anything by Percy Shelley. No, actually, I really like poetry, just, I don't know. You never read anything by Percy Shelley.
I'm looking it up right now to see if I have.
I mean, if you're going to read famous poets, you're probably going to read, like, Poe and Frost.
Apparently Mary Shelley was a second wife. Wow, he only died at age 29. That is young.
He died at age 29 and he had two wives?
Yeah, I know.
Jesus, man.
Oh, I wonder if his first wife died. When he was 19, he eloped to a 16-year-old Harriet Westbrook.
Yikes, guys.
I don't know what else happened.
Again with the minors. Again with the minors. Like, okay, maybe she wasn't considered a minor at that point in time.
Yeah, in 1811, that was probably normal. My grandmother got married at 16 in the 1950s, but her husband was also 16.
Yeah, see, that's less... I mean, that's still kind of weird to be getting married at 16, but it's much less weird to be married to another 16-year-old.
Yeah.
I know in the state of Georgia, you're allowed to get married at 16 with your parents' permission.
Yeah, more than just Georgia. There are a few states.
And I think it's, like, younger in some places, and I'm just sitting here like, okay.
Yeah, that would have never happened for me.
No.
I would have never let that happen.
That's not gonna happen.
I have read a Percy Shelley poem. I'm sorry.
Wait, you've actually read one?
I did last semester.
Huh.
Ozymandias.
Oh, Ozymandias.
Yes. That's like, from Percy Shelley.
I've never actually read it, but I've heard, like, I know about it.
It's good. I liked it, actually. So, yeah. But I like poetry, so.
I mean, I do like poetry. I've just never read anything by Shelley.
It was good. I don't recognize anything else of his, really. I'm sure there are people out there who know all of his works, but.
And then we're going to get a bunch of angry comments from poetry fans coming out of the woodwork.
Yes.
Which would make a change, but. But, okay, can we talk about for a second how hardcore goth Mary Shelley was? Because she was super hardcore goth.
I did not know that.
She was so hardcore goth. Lost her virginity on her mother's grave.
Huh.
Doesn't get more goth than that. Also, when Percy died, like, his heart had sort of, or at least this is what I heard, like, that his heart sort of, like, calcified into, like, this really, really hard stone. And she carried it around with her, like, wrapped in some of his poems.
That's Poe-esque.
No one is more goth than Mary Shelley.
It makes me think of, this is mostly unrelated, but, Angelina Jolie and her necklace of, was it blood? From her boyfriend, husband at the time. I can't remember.
What?
What is his name? He's super creepy.
You
don't know anything about Angelina Jolie?
I mean, like, I know a bit about Angelina Jolie.
Bob Thornton.
I've never heard anything about any necklace of blood. What is this? I mean, Angelina Jolie is a perfectly reasonable, science fictional person. Laura Croft, I think.
She wore a vial of his blood around her neck when she was married to Billy Bob Thornton. Super creepy.
That's terrifying, yeah. I mean, yeah, that's pretty goth. Congrats, Angelina.
Well, he's a creepy dude, so.
Yeah.
It all comes down to him, I think, with that one.
I don't know,
when I was in high school, we had to wear vials of our own DNA for biology. I thought that was...
I remember making those. Yeah.
We did it with onion DNA as well, but that was less exciting.
Less exciting. Less likely to get clones from... I mean, like...
Well, you could get onion clones, but...
Onion clones. I mean... gross. Who came up with that idea anyway? Just in your biology class, let's just, you know what the kids would find fun? Making their own DNA sequence and wearing it around as a necklace.
Yeah, I honestly don't remember why we had to wear it as a necklace.
I remember making it. I remember not wearing it.
Well, I wore mine. I was proud.
Oh, God.
I also had no friends, so.
Oh. Aw. I'm sure you had some friends.
Some.
Listen, you're preaching to the choir here.
I was actually in drama, so I had friends, but they were all super weird.
But they were all drama kids.
Yes, exactly.
See, I wasn't a drama kid, but I was a drama kid in middle school, but I was not a drama kid in high school. But all of my friends were still drama kids, so I was just like, so I learned all of the, like, drama that went on in drama, but, like, tangentially. So I'm, like, sitting here, like,
yeah, I was creeping. Never in the drama, thankfully.
No, it's like, no, one of my friends would sit in chemistry with me and then just sort of, like, spill all of the drama that had been happening in drama club. And I was just sitting there like, yes, good. Because I am nosy. I am a nosy fucker. I am. It's unfortunate.
It's fun.
It's fun. It'll get you in trouble.
Instead of nosy, I like to call myself inquisitive.
Curious.
I'm an inquisitive motherfucker.
Excellent. Excellent.
Like Nancy Drew.
Yes. Or like various, you know, sci-fi women.
Going back to that thing we're supposed to be talking
about.
Science fiction.
Science fiction. Because, like, whenever you get a female character that is, like, supposed to be relatable to the audience, or maybe, like, an audience insert character, they're always super dumb. So that everything can be explained to them.
Yeah, the lay person.
Yeah. But, like, it feels... Like, when the lay person is a female, it also still feels, like... condescending.
Yeah, I mean, it comes across as, like, Valley Girl sometimes. Just, mm-hmm. like, the dumb blonde that you can explain things to, kind of.
You're being mansplained.
Yeah.
Your science fiction is being mansplained to
me. I'm actually, like, trying to think of an example, and I keep coming up with a male character who's a dumb blonde, but PETA in Hunger Games. He comes across as so dumb to me.
I mean... I don't, like, I have, like, three characters in the Hunger Games that I like.
PETA's not one, I'm assuming. No. I mean, who likes PETA? Let's be real.
There's a lot of people who like PETA. Like, there was an entire war of the PETA and Gale.
Yeah, I remember.
Issues.
Just like Twilight stuff.
In my middle school. And I'm sitting here like, I hate all of them. I really do. The only characters I care about and cared about in these books was, like, Rue... Finnick, Haymitch,
I didn't Effie. Mind Katniss.
Effie was fun.
Yeah.
Just in how ridiculous she was. Foxface.
So, Twilight came out when I was in middle school. And so, to me, Hunger Games was like that, but we can do better kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so to me,
it was less unhealthy.
Right. And the characters were just kind of better to me because Bella was just such a personality-less person to me. So I liked...
Could be replaced with the cardboard cutout.
Exactly. Wouldn't make a difference. Yes. That's why everyone says, still a better love story than Twilight. Even if it's like throwing a tomato on the ground, still a better love story than Twilight. It doesn't even have to make sense. Everything's a better love story than Twilight.
Don't worry about it. But, unless it's Twilight fanfiction, then it's a crapshoot.
That's true. But I bet there's fanfiction out there for Twilight that's far superior to Twilight.
Oh, no,
there
definitely is. There absolutely is. But sometimes it isn't. Because they're just not given enough to work with.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And it's not even really science fiction, is it?
I mean, like, it's supernatural.
Yeah, I can never tell with that one. Like, I know Hunger Games is.
Yeah, because that one's... That one's a dystopic future, you know, after, I think that one's set after like World War III.
I don't remember. Something catastrophic.
Yeah. Supposedly happened. Like, we never see anything outside of what became, what happened to the U.S. The rest of the world might be just fine. For all we're aware.
All the shit's going down in the U.S. The world doesn't even know about it. They're killing each other under a dome.
Don't worry about it. No, I still think, like, the world building in The Hunger Games was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I just didn't like the characters, so I didn't like the series. But no, like, there's so much, like, the arena itself, just the world building around the arena, there's so much you could do with that. Which is why I love Hunger Games Fusion fan fiction, because they take advantage of the arena setting.
So it's taking other characters out of other things and putting it into the arena?
Putting them into the Hunger Games, yeah.
Okay.
So that one's fun times. That's fun times. That's real fun times.
Just for kicks, we'll take Edward, Bella, and Jacob and put them in the arena.
Honestly, I think Bella would take out Edward.
Their little weird child that they had in the fourth book would take out all of them.
I mean, true. True that. Just for kicks. You just stick a bunch of science fiction characters in the Hunger Games, see what comes out. There's a fun challenge for you.
Renesmee comes out on top, always. She clawed her way out of Bella's stomach.
Yes.
Or uterus, whatever.
I don't know. But no, actually, that would be a super fun, like, I don't know, like a like radio drama,
okay,
to do.
Like, I was thinking BuzzFeed quiz, but all right.
Take a bunch of famous science fiction characters, you know, some of the crew from Star Trek, some of the people from Stargate, you know, just some from, like, Asimov stories or something. Just throw them all together into the Hunger Games and then make a radio broadcast of what happened each day.
That would be cool.
In the arena. That would be fun. Somebody should get on that. I might do it.
I was going to say, why not us?
I might do it. It might be fun. You might see that next episode. Maybe not next episode. Maybe next semester.
Yeah, I was going to say, give yourself some time here.
Well, maybe we'll come back with the sci-fi Hunger Games next semester. That might be fun.
We'll put Sandy in there.
Oh, come on.
A dome under a dome.
Hey, there's nothing that says the arena has to be a dome.
I know, but it's cool.
Fair. The entire arena is just Sandy Cheeks' home.
It's her dome.
It's her dome.
We'll put him in her home.
No, in that case, then she's not a contestant. She's just there.
Yeah.
As like...
She's one of the capital people.
No, she's like a mutt in the arena. She just starts killing people. Using her karate skill.
Just for fun. She's not on any one side.
No. But she's in hibernation during that time. Mm. Remember hibernation setting?
I do, yeah. Put Patrick in there, but he'd just be under the dome, like he's under his rock.
Yeah. So occasionally the dome will flip on its side, yep, because Patrick's getting up,
yep,
and leaving. This episode got weird.
It did. I'm not going to apologize, though.
Nah. This is par for the course, guys. It only goes down from here.
Yeah. It only gets more weird.
Don't worry about it. You're on the weird section of YouTube now. You're it. Not even God can save you. The AI might be able to, but they haven't caught up to us yet.
They're too busy being sexualized.
Yeah. All right, well, that's it for this week. Thanks for listening.